Do you hear that? It's the sound of TD Ameritrade's Education Center working smoothly behind the scenes to curate its own content to your investment goals and interests. Head over to tdameritrade.com/education to start learning. Member SIPC.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, June 4th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Cyber attacks have become practically an everyday occurrence, and they've had massive consequences. Just in the past few months, major attacks have disrupted fuel transportation and meat production. They've interrupted patient care at hospitals and compromised data security within government agencies. These attacks have put pressure on the government to do something about it. On today's show, our cybersecurity reporter David Uberti will explain what lawmakers and regulators are considering. That's after these headlines. Since last year, the Chinese fintech giant Ant Group has been working to overhaul its business after regulators forced it to call off its blockbuster IPO. Yesterday, it took a key step on that path. China's banking and insurance regulator said it approved Ant's application to set up a consumer finance company. Ant will own 50% of the new entity, which will fundamentally change how Ant conducts consumer lending and other operations. The rest will be held by six other shareholders, including two state-owned financial institutions. Google removed a senior member of its diversity team over anti-Semitic remarks he made in a 2007 blog post. The post surfaced this week in several news outlets, including the New York Post. In a statement, a Google spokeswoman condemned the remarks and said the employee, Kamau Bob, would no longer be part of the diversity team. Instead, she said that Bob would focus on STEM work. Bob apologized for the 2007 post in an email sent this week to a group of Jewish workers at Google, which was reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. And lots of big tech companies are losing money, but the same can't always be said about their CEOs. Securities filings show that both Palantir and DoorDash gave their longtime CEOs special stock awards worth hundreds of millions of dollars in 2020. Alexander Karp of Palantir received compensation worth $1.1 billion last year, and DoorDash awarded its CEO, Tony Hsu, restricted shares initially valued at more than $400 million. Neither Palantir nor DoorDash is profitable, and yet the awards amount to two of the biggest compensation packages ever awarded to corporate leaders. In their filings, the companies describe the awards as tools to keep their CEOs motivated. All right, coming up after the break, what the government response to the recent rise in cyber attacks could look like. That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Athena Health, creator of innovative electronic medical record, revenue cycle, patient engagement, care coordination, and population health services for medical practices and health systems. Some healthcare IT companies have just begun to move toward connected systems. Athena Health started there. See how their unparalleled nationwide network of providers enables the insights that drive better clinical and financial outcomes. Learn more at athenahealth.com.
A raft of cyber attacks in recent weeks and months has wreaked havoc on supply chains and critical infrastructure in the U.S. Hospitals, oil pipelines, even the meat industry. The situation has experts and cyber officials calling for a strong government response. One of the main areas that the administration has been looking at is cryptocurrencies and their role in ransomware attacks in particular. That's where hackers lock victims out of their systems until they pay a ransom. Here's what FBI Director Christopher Wray had to say in an exclusive interview with The Wall Street Journal's Aruna Viswanatha.
As part of dealing with the cyber threat, we're going after not just the actors who are demanding the ransom and the actors developing the ransomware, but we're trying to go after their currency, their cryptocurrency. We're trying to go after the money itself. We're trying to go after the criminal's own infrastructure and taking it down.
For more on how the government is looking at this issue, I'm joined now by our cybersecurity reporter, David Uberti. Hey, Dave, you again. Thanks for coming back on the show.
Always happy to be here.
We're grateful. Okay, so why cryptocurrencies? How do they factor into these attacks? And why is this such a high priority for the administration?
I mean, I think it boils down to just a mantra of journalism and law enforcement and apparently ransomware as well, which is to follow the money. in all cases. Hackers demand ransoms in cryptocurrencies because they're difficult to track. They move freely across borders to different exchanges that operate in different countries. They can easily be transferred into different wallets that sort of disguise who's operating them in the background. So that really opens a lot of opportunities for them to extract these payments from companies, then sort of fade away into the distance. Cryptocurrencies in general are largely unregulated compared to sort of financial services as we know them. So I think now you're seeing some regulators in the U.S. and increasingly law enforcement agencies as well saying that they need to take a really hard look at this.
And so what are they considering to try and combat this issue? What's on the table here?
The administration has been pretty vague over the last couple of days, but what they have said is they want to improve the ways in which they can trace some of these ransom payments. So if a company decides that it does, in fact, need to pay off hackers, the government wants to be able to track that better than it currently is able to do so. Now, that could mean, you know, something as simple as the government bolstering the Treasury Department, which has staffers that track financial crimes to see if they can follow the money in these cases. That could be, you know, law enforcement agencies sharing more information across various local departments and the FBI and whatnot. It could also mean, you know, new regulations, both internally inside the United States and then externally in the form of the United States trying to collaborate with international partners to try to sort of impose some sort of uniform international standards for how cryptocurrency exchanges get data from the customers they work with, and also how ransomware victims report some of the data for if and when they decide to make these payments.
And I know you said these are kind of vague measures and ideas thus far, but I'm wondering how this fits in with other measures that the Biden administration and regulators are considering to rein in cyber attacks more generally, not just necessarily ransomware.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, what the administration has said over the last few days after the hack of this, you know, major meat processing company is that they have essentially a four-legged stool for how they're approaching ransomware. One is to disrupt the, you know, loosely organized gangs that are behind this. Another one is to evaluate the United States' own ransomware policy. So assumedly that would be of whether it is allowed to make ransomware payments or potentially whether, you know, government agencies are allowed to make those payments. The third stool is creating an international sort of coalition, if you will, of countries to essentially pressure other nations such as Russia or China or Iran or what have you that oftentimes provide safe harbor for ransomware gangs. And then finally, we have the cryptocurrency piece, which for some of the reasons that we're talking about here could be one of the most thorny.
Yeah. And one thing I'm curious about, you know, as you mentioned, so many of these attacks are happening across borders, and this is a really international problem. How much action can one government really take to combat this issue?
It's a really difficult question. I mean, the first thing to understand is that the U.S. does have some sanctions that pertain to ransomware payments. The Treasury Department does enforce sanction rules when hackers might be affiliated with a sanctioned entity. Companies are really not allowed to do that, and they could face pretty stiff penalties if they do end up paying a group that has that sort of affiliation. Outside of that, I mean, it is a very difficult situation where you have these foreign exchanges that may operate out of countries such as China. They may operate out of other countries as well that the U.S. would really need to exert some pressure on, maybe in the form of sanctions, different types of sanctions in terms of getting them on board with our, you know, overall ransomware policy. So, you know, while the U.S. can do some things in terms of exerting its sort of economic might and, you know, instituting these regulations and sanctions and whatnot, it is also relying on this idea that we can convince other people to get on board as well. And if not convince them, then coerce them. So I think it's a really open question, you know, after the Biden administration's actually comes out and says what it will do with regard to cryptocurrency, you know, how it will bring other countries along for the ride.
So what has to happen for any of these initiatives to move ahead? And how long will it be before we should expect to see some results here?
Well, it's probably going to take some time. In December, the Treasury Department proposed some new rules for cryptocurrency transactions, basically requiring companies to report payments over $10,000 and also collect data about what types of customers they're working with. So you have that rolled out in December. That's still in the process of making rules. So that gives you a sense of how long some of these decisions and sort of carrying out those decisions takes. So while there's some things that the Biden administration can do with regard to executive actions, forcing government contractors to improve their cybersecurity, maybe changing government policies in terms of negotiating with ransomware operators, et cetera, in terms of imposing new regulations, let alone passing new laws, that's a really, really long-term task.
All right, that's our cybersecurity reporter, David Uberti. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
That's it for Tech News Briefing this week. Our supervising producer is Chris Zinsley. Our executive producer is Kateri Yoakum. And I'm your host, Amanda Llewellyn. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.